Football on Off the Ball. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. So we're delving into the wonderful world of League of Ireland. Dan McDonald is back with us. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Joe.
European action. We had four teams setting out on this journey, and where are we?
Well, two remain, basically. Cork City remain because of a new rule this year whereby if you lose your first Champions League game, the Randburg and Dock went out last year to Rosenborg. They were just done. This year you get another chance in the Europa League, where there's a new route through the Europa League for teams who've come out of the Champions League to go into the Europa League, just strictly by playing other champions who've been knocked out of that competition. So Cork lost against Legia Warsaw, 4-0 over the two legs. You know, bit of a near miss in the first leg, probably didn't do enough in the second game. They got a bye just by complete fluke through the second round of the Europa League. Just one team had to get a bye, and they did. And they will now play either Celtic or Rosenborg in the next round of the Europa League, the losers of the Celtic losers and Rosenborg tie.
I presume Celtic are favoured there.
They would be favourites. They scraped past Rosenborg last year, but Rosenborg were after getting rid of their manager and they seem to be in a bit of turmoil. So, and Celtic are good. You'd expect Celtic to get that done. Derry City are out. They lost 2-0 at home to Minsk in the first leg. They won 2-1 away. Shamrock Rovers again lost 1-0 at home to Solna AIK, the Swedish champions, beat them 1-0 away and then lost on extra time, as in beat them 1-0 over 90 minutes and lost extra time. So slightly frustrating, you know, the teams actually acquitted themselves quite well. They were playing sides who the key here is the Shamrock Rovers and Derry were unseeded and they went out to teams that I guess probably should be better than them, but they could have done better, no doubt, in the home legs to give themselves a better chance. So I think it would be frustrating. And then the one team that did win their tie was Dundalk. But crucially, they were seeded because of their recent good results in Europe. So they were seeded in the first round and indeed the second round of the Europa League. So they played Levadia Tallinn of Estonia and they won away 1-0 and then they beat them 2-1 last Thursday in Oriel Park. It was a game I was at. I wasn't working. I just went along to watch it. And they got through. I wouldn't say they played to their absolute peak, but I guess they're a side that's not all of them, but there's lads there who've played a lot of European games, and I think their European experience definitely shows that they're used to this, and they made the most of maybe chances they got at certain times in the tie.
So people were very impressed with Michael Duffy's goal. Did you have a good view of it?
I did. Yeah, I was sort of. I wasn't quite in the press box, just to the side of it. But it's one of these goals where, because generally just at League of Ireland games, unless they're televised live, there's only like one camera angle. And I was watching it from the opposite side to that. So it sort of looked amazing. And then you hope that when you see the replay, that it looks as good. You know, sometimes you switch the sides and it wasn't actually that impressive. But it was sort of stunning technique. I presume people would have seen it. Maybe not everyone would have seen it by this stage. But yeah. I mean, it was compared to the Marco van Basten volley in Euro 88, and there certainly was something about that volley from a tight angle on his weaker foot as well.
To capture the mood when it went in, here is Jer Cunningham alongside John Murphy on Dundalk FM.
And here's McGrath, the vicious ball to Duffy! Goal! What a goal! Oh, what a goal! Michael Duffy nearly breaks the net! And that's the tie over. Oh, that's the goal to be echoed down in the years to come, we'll think of that one. Beautiful ball in. And on the half volley, he was coming in, Michael Duffy. He hit it on from the left-hand side into the right-hand side, the ball across the goalkeeper in the top corner of the net. What a goal! We're spoiled for choice here. Goals are raining in Oriel Park again.
That's a fantastic goal. And his weaker left foot from almost an impossible angle. Still like Marco van Basten in Munich all those years ago in the European Championship final in 1988. Very, very similar. Left foot of volley, top corner. The net wasn't there and still be travelling. What power, what precision. Michael Duffy, brilliant, brilliant.
And we're delighted to say Michael Duffy joins us on the line. Evening, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
How you doing? So, Marco van Basten, is that the new nickname we're around training?
That's all it was been saying to me.
Talk us through the goal. You obviously we've seen the ball coming from a bit of a distance. It was, you know, it was kind of dinked up in the air and you were at a bit of an angle. You just decided to welly it. Was that the general thinking?
As soon as I seen Jamie sort of pick it up and I've seen him look towards me, I knew he's going to try that ball. Like, I thought, it's obviously left me at a bit of a tight angle, but there was nothing else on me to do, really. Like, there was no one in the box. So I just thought I might as well, really. Like, and I couldn't have connected with it any better.
Because if you take it down there, as you said, there's no one in the box and you're at a very wide angle, there's not much on. So it was a fair enough choice to have a crack from that kind of an angle, even though it was such a difficult strike.
Yeah, it was like the angle was so tight, like probably 9 out of 10 times, like I'm hitting that, I'm skying it, or I'm going out for a goal kick, something like that. But like, I just couldn't have connected with it any better. And like, I had nothing else to do, really. Like, I think Pat Holden was in the edge of the box and I was sort of stretching for it even at that, so I just may as well shot, and lucky it went in.
But Michael, I was speaking to one of your teammates, Robbie Benson, who mentioned that you do quite fancy a volley, like in training and stuff like that. It's something you practice. You sort of like to have a go at those ones from time to time.
We do. We always do like a lot of shooting at the end of training, and we do volleys and stuff, and I practice a lot on my left foot, like on my weak side. And then even just as the way Jamie played that pass, sometimes we would do, you know, just sort of drill, even just carrying on, not really a shooting drill, just like a pass over the top like that and trying to volley it. But I still, even at all times of practicing, I don't think I've actually scored one. So the practicing's obviously helped me.
We're just watching it back here and watching the celebrations. Sean Gannon looks like he's seen a ghost. He actually can't believe what he's seen. Have you noticed that?
I've seen the celebration back. He's hands on his head, and I think Pat Holden was the same far side.
What does that feel like when you do something like that on a big stage in Europe, big crowd? It must be an amazing feeling.
It was an amazing feeling. I think it's probably one of the best feelings I've had. You know, score, like, definitely at Dundalk, and I was scoring just because it was such a big game. And obviously, it was put the game away a bit anyway. You know, getting the first goal and then scoring straight after it did settle us a good bit. I was just delighted to score.
I mean, Michael, you're having a very good season. Like, does confidence play any part in you taking that on? I mean, I don't know if things aren't going as well. Do you play it safe? Do you try and take it down? Is it just something to do with things are going very well for you and you're sort of confident enough to have a go with something like that?
I don't know. Maybe I'm obviously, like, I'm feeling confident the minute I've been playing well and stuff, but I think even if that was the start of the year, I probably would have tried to shoot anyway, just because there was nothing else on, literally, for me to do. So it was either shoot or I don't even know what else I could have done. I don't think I could have took it down.
So, as Dan says, the season's been going very well. Like, Stephen Kenny has a real way with players. He seems to, Dan was just saying off air as well, with wingers in particular, he seems to get them going and get them playing well. How has Stephen Kenny been for you, or what's he done to get you flying the way you are this season?
He's been brilliant for me since I came on last year. Even last year I was enjoying it, and obviously I'm just feeling a bit better this year, maybe getting the full pre-season and that under me. I just feel a bit fitter and stuff, but just the way Stephen lets me play, like, you have a lot of possession in that and keep it, and he just sort of gives me like a free role in a way. Like, obviously I need to work hard in that, but he just a lot of freedom in that he wants me to play with, and it's just given me a lot of confidence, and I've been enjoying it playing under him.
Yeah, so it's about enjoyment, it's about confidence, it's about being told to go out and express yourself effectively.
Yeah, like, the main thing is really enjoying it, really. And since I've come back, I've enjoyed every moment at Dundalk, like, since I've just been playing every week and playing every game, and just it's a good squad and that, and it's just good there.
When you say come back, people, I'm sure, will be aware, most people will be, certainly League of Ireland fans, that you're talking about going over to Celtic back in, I think it was maybe 2015 now, you went over from Derry City, which is obviously a huge move, and it's a 4-year deal, and like, that is a big, big club to try and make a breakthrough, and there were plenty of loan spells. What was it like over there? I mean, like, were you training with the first team initially, or did you get close to them, or how did it go for you?
I did train a lot with the first team, to be fair, but just it was some days in, some days not with them and stuff, so it wasn't really like a frequent, you know, first team player. I didn't really get to that stage.
Yeah.
And then I was out on loan a lot. I was out on loan in Alba for my first season, but that was part-time at Alba, so I was only training weeknights, and then I was on our day still on at Celtic, like, and sometimes I would train with the first team in that. And probably the closest I got was maybe the first pre-season that I was there for, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, like, spent it with the first team in that and came on in one of the pre-season games. I actually was doing okay. It was probably, I feel, the best spell I really had at Celtic. There wasn't really you won with the first team.
Mm.
But obviously the squad's massive there, and they're signing players for like 15 million and stuff like that, and just wingers and attacking players. Like, so it's always going to be tough to get in. And so the loan spell is probably the best thing for me.
And how did you feel the standard was when you're there getting those few weeks in pre-season, say, before they go and sign another winger for 15 million and you're thinking, great, here we go again. But when you're actually in for a couple of weeks consecutively and getting a bit of rhythm, you know, because it sounds quite tough when you're in and out different days. When you're in getting a rhythm, did you feel you were kind of approaching that standard, that you could handle it, or was there still a bit of a gap, or how was that?
It's a lot quicker. It's just non-stop, really, and just the standard of the players, like technically, and that is brilliant. And
yeah.
But some days, you know, I was okay at times in training that, but I probably wasn't at my best playing, you know. Just don't feel the way I'm playing now at the minute, like enjoying myself as much. I don't feel like I was at that stage.
Yeah, I mean, is it enjoyment now? Is it natural improvement? I mean, just to sort of rephrase slightly, I mean, do you consider yourself as a different player now than the one that came home and has sort of had a season and a half, or do you think it's just a confidence thing that's brought you back to your level maybe that you're at before the move?
I think it's just enjoying football. I think it's really the main thing for me, and like obviously when your confidence builds then, the more you're enjoying it. And I love my time over at Celtic, and it was a good experience for me and stuff, but just realising now, obviously back here, the way I'm playing, I'm enjoying it a lot more.
Mm. Obviously, you're catching the eye of different international managers, it seems, at the moment. I know you were in with the Northern Irish squad a couple of years ago, and Martin O'Neill has said a few nice things about you in the last while as well. Do you have international ambitions? Do you want to play with the Republic, with the North? Is it undecided? Where are you with all of that? And I know you have plenty with, you know, just next game for Dundalk and all that, but have you given thought to where you want to end up internationally if the call comes?
Well, if the call came from Martin O'Neill, like, I'd be delighted. I would definitely jump at that. Like, but at the same thing, I was in the Northern Ireland squad, and
yeah,
it's just a huge thing to play for your international, you know, for your country. So it's not like I wouldn't be turning down either. Obviously, if Martin came, you know, I would take that opportunity under Martin.
Mm.
Like, if the time comes, like, hopefully it does. You know, it's only really came back to me the past maybe month or two. That's whenever I've heard, you know, Martin O'Neill's been at the matches and stuff, but. Like, I'd love that. You know, that's one of the main things you want to do, is, you know, play for your country.
And have you spoken to Martin at all, or is it fairly from
no,
a distance?
No, I haven't spoken to him. I've just heard he's been at the games and stuff, and said a few good words for me, like, which is good. And he was obviously at the game on Thursday as well, I'm hearing, so like, it's another good thing for me.
Okay. But it's probably one of those situations where if Michael O'Neill calls you into a squad and wants to give you a game, you're going to take that opportunity too.
Yeah, it's just like, I can't turn it down, really. You couldn't say no to anyone offering you an international. You know, I'd love to play for Republic, but
yeah,
you know, I have a lot of family from Northern Ireland as well, and so it doesn't really make a difference to me. But you know, if I did have to choose, I would be choosing Republic of Ireland.
And then, Michael, this Thursday you have Larnaca coming to town. First leg, kickoff 7:45. It's going to be an Air Sport. It's going to be a huge occasion. How do you see this one shaping up?
We're all feeling good. Looking forward to it. We've been doing a lot of stuff on them the past couple of days, and. We need to improve about the way we were against, you know, in our last game. I know we got the one, but maybe our performance wasn't as good as it should be. But we're all looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, I mean, I gather you've been doing your homework on them, as you mentioned. They seem like a different side to Levadia. I mean, they seem pretty experienced. I think they have a big Spanish influence in their side as well. I mean, they played Cork City last year and did a very sort of professional job against them. So, are you expecting it to be very different from what you've seen?
I think it will. I think it will be a different type of game. Like, Tam were physical, and they were very good with the ball as well. But I think this team is going to be, you know, keep it all day. There are a lot of ex-Spanish La Liga players, and I think they've got a few internationals in there as well, like Macedonia and stuff like that. So it's going to be very tough. But obviously, we play our own game. I think, you know, we just match them, then you never know what happens.
I mean, is this the type of game that you feel might suit you, though, as well? And that Dundalk team, that you do have pace and wide areas, that even if there's periods where you don't have the ball, that your ability to break quickly is a big asset.
Yeah, that could be good for us. That's worked well for us this season. Whenever, you know, breaking on teams, we've got a lot of goals from, you know, from on the break. So that could work well for us. And then obviously, we love to keep the ball as well, so it could be just a game, like a proper game of football, two teams trying to keep the ball. And just see what happens.
Yeah, no, listen, the very best of luck with it. I'm sure it will be a great occasion. There'll be a packed house. And look, if you want to pop up with another Marco Van Basten-esque volley, I'm sure that'll be fine too.
Oh, definitely.
No pressure.
I'll score another one like that again, but I would I'd love to.
Yeah. Listen, Michael, thanks a million for joining us. Appreciate it. Best of luck Thursday.
No worries, thank you.
Cheers, Michael.
There is Michael Duffy joining us on the line and having a good season.
Yeah, no, he's having a great season. And he replaced Daryl Horgan after Daryl Horgan went to Preston, basically. That was Dundalk signing that winter. And I guess in keeping with a lot of last year for Dundalk, that they really struggled, and Cork were amazing last year. And Dundalk sort of struggled at the start of it. But what's happened this year is that a lot of the lads in their second season with the club, like Duffy, like Jamie McGrath, who made the goal last week, Sean Hoare, a few others, that they've just sort of got the grips with things there. And some of them have improved.
Seems to be a little bit of a trend of players in Dundalk, because they're a fairly fit team, getting that pre-season under them.
Yeah,
tends to be a big thing.
Yeah,
I think kick on in the second year a good bit.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. And someone like Duffy, I think it might have been confidence, as he mentioned there. The likes of maybe Jamie McGrath, who's a player I think we'll be talking a lot about in the coming years. He just wasn't really, he's a very talented player, but wasn't really physically strong enough when he was younger. And now he's completely developed that side of his game. And there's a few other players that there's different reasons, but I think maybe it is the culture that's there. They tend to improve in their second year and you know, it's their third year if they stay. I mean, that's still the challenge ultimately, is to keep hold of some of these better players, because, I mean, Duffy's definitely going to have interest.
It's refreshing sometimes talking to League of Ireland players, because they give you straight answers still. They haven't been PR trained to within an inch of their life. And so he should have told me, you know, I'm taking each game as it comes. I'm not thinking about international football. But he was fairly honest there.
Yeah.
If Michael or Martin O'Neill want him, then you'd want to get in before the other one.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I don't know, you're trying to read between the lines, but I guess it was pretty clear where his preference lies.
Sure. But if Michael comes along and says, you're in my next squad, come and play.
Yeah.
You can't turn that down.
I guess so, although I'm preempting here, but I mean, he was in a full Northern Ireland squad in 2016. Like, why hasn't there been a call since then? Do you then think, well, maybe someone's not sure about me or whatever it might be? And also, when someone has openly maybe said that their preference is somewhere else, then maybe it wouldn't play that well to call them up, you know, particularly Paul, they're maybe based in the league here as well. I don't know how that plays. It's a difficult situation to wade into.
Maybe Martin O'Neill has bugged Michael O'Neill so much at this stage that Michael says this is perfect.
Well, it seems, you know, there would have to be paperwork to go through for the switch. I mean, you mentioned about his previous international experience.
Yeah.
Like, it's a difficult one, because I know that one of Michael O'Neill's gripes is the FAI going after players and then changing, you know, making them change. If Michael Duffy went through the paperwork now, even if he wasn't capped, he wouldn't be able to change back again. So I guess the FAI would have to be really, really sure that they wanted him to go through that.
So it's
not straightforward.
I wanted to ask you a bit quickly about a few other bits and pieces going on. So the St. Patrick's Athletic Stadium development plan is something that we've been hearing about for a while now. In April, they proposed to construct the Richmond Arena as part of an overall city development plan. This was going to include new houses and a shopping complex and an underground car park. But this week, the Minister for Housing, Owen Murphy, has said that instead of that, there's going to be 472 housing units constructed. I saw Dave McIntyre was covering a game at Richmond on Friday with Brian Kerr, actually, and pre-game they were having a chat about this. Brian Kerr didn't think much of the Owen Murphy choice as opposed to the St. Pat's choice. Just have a listen here.
I think the St. Patrick's Athletic Regeneration Project was far superior to the project that we are hearing about now. This area has badly needed the development. The Pats project would have developed more housing than the one that's now proposed by the City Council. It also would have developed the community facilities and the sporting facilities that this area is crying out for. It badly needed regeneration. It's needed the town centre. It's needed lots and lots of things. This club needs a better facility. And I would hope that there could be some rethinking done on this, and that the Pats project will come back into play, because it's a great club. It's essential. Its progress is essential to this area, and the area needs it. It needs housing, it needs the community facilities, it needs a lot of things, it needs a shopping centre, it needs development. It's been run down for many, many years, and not many people have done much about it.
So Kerr's talking there about a need for a shopping centre, a need for community facilities. Does the Owen Murphy, does the government plan not have any of that?
No, this is the thing. I mean, it sort of broke, or I think it was actually in the Independent on, I think it was a Thursday or Friday, that you know, it was leaning this way. And there was a sort of quite an angry response from the likes of Brian initially, also Ger O'Brien at St Patrick's Athletic, the sort of assistant manager who's involved in the underage direction there. And now I appreciate that. I mean, these people are probably biased in the sense that their heart is ruling their head in terms of wanting the PATH plan to go through, but they very articulately laid out problems that exist in that area. And Ger in particular on Twitter, you know, went into a lengthy message explaining, you know, that just going to an area where there's no amenities and just throwing more families and more houses into it,
yes,
creates social problems over a period of time. And yeah, this is repeating mistakes. And so to respond to your question, when the announcement was made by Owen Murphy earlier this week, there was references to sort of, you know, retail units and other amenities, but it smacked maybe a small bit of an add-on. To certainly in the story that came out last week, that wasn't a big part of whatever information seeped out in the first place. So it was sort of an unconvincing add-on to it.
And I presume Richmond Park remains untouched then?
Yeah, see, that part of the... I mean, obviously the issue was that, I mean, Gareth Keller, who's the owner of St Pat's, you would have been handing this land over to like a private... private individual, private developer. But part of the deal would have been that Richmond Park, which is right in the middle of Inchicore, naturally would have been handed over for development as part of the arrangement. And as I think Brian alluded to in the clip, and Pats have mentioned subsequently, that their plan would have had some housing involved with it as well, the same amount. I mean, critics of it would say, well, what quality would that have been? It's a complicated issue to delve into. And in a way, I would defer to the people who know the area extremely well.
Yes.
And really feel a strong sense of disillusionment over the direction that the area has taken, and would feel that the stadium would bring some benefit. Not everyone feels that way. There are people who just believe we need social housing, this is a problem, and that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But the Pats plan, yes, it would have been great for Pats. It would have been great for the people behind it. But they... I do think that, you know, Gareth Keller has been involved with that club for a long time and does seem to care about the area too. Otherwise, I think he would have skedaddled when the club had maybe, you know, hit problems before now. So
yeah.
they haven't given up hope, and it does seem like there's been a bit of a backlash to this decision, and there will be consultation. But it may well be that the future of Pats is in a redeveloped Richmond Park, which, as you know from being there, it wouldn't have the scope to be as impressive as this. Richmond Arena plan, which they were talking about, which might have given the whole area some real central focal point.
Yeah, okay. Last question, if you can, I know it's impossible, keep it to under a minute or so. Where are you? Where are we now in Limerick and Bray?
I mean, I've had a small bit of time off, and it seems to have like calmed a small bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, where are we? You know, there's been commitments made. That both sides will be able to pay their players. They seem to have averted strike action, that, you know, money has come forward to solve the problems at Bray. You know, Limerick, it seems to be similar commitments have been reached, but I've sort of seen this before in some degree. I think we're over the storm, but there's no guarantee that the bad weather ain't going to come back around again in, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks time. So we're not quite out of the woods. It's always deflating when it's sort of, it happens around the same time as European games. You see the good and the bad all in one sort of snapshot.
Football on Off the Ball. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.